Hello and welcome to Elite Cadre, the Hordes and War Machine podcast that routinely forgets exactly what it is that Eyeless Sight doesn't ignore. I'm Mike.
I'm Alex.
I'm Kurt.
And I'm Nick.
This week we'll be taking a look at the cavalry of the Iron Kingdoms, whether you should be using it, and whether it's worth the points you spent on it. We'll be taking a look at a cracking caster in the form of Marcus Siege Brisbane in Spelling It Out, and also bringing you a special surprise with the aid of Terrain Geek. There is no news this week, unfortunately, because, well, there just wasn't any. So,
Is that a good thing, or we're not sure?
No news is good news.
Well, yeah, you know, there's no more spoilers, because No Quarter's moved no further since the last time we heard it. It's probably on the same ship waiting for customs clearance.
I think one issue we've had is we're recording fairly close to each other. We've had a few off weeks.
We're only a week on to our last
recording date.
We're trying to get back onto an alleged schedule.
Alleged.
Yeah.
This does mean we're now recording the week before the Welsh Open?
No.
No. 2 weeks before the Welsh Open.
If the Welsh Open was this weekend, I would be panicking rather more than I am now.
When
we'll
is the Welsh
recording straight after the Welsh Open then. So we'll be recording the day after. So we can get the views after they've happened.
Yes, yeah. You'll be able to hear me go... Urgh.
Get the lowdown on what could be coming for the UK Masters.
Yes, exactly. Seeing as people don't have... Well, seeing as people will have already submitted their lists for Masters and therefore can't change them.
Yeah.
Well...
You again, as well get to kind of see the movers and shakers as well from the Welsh Open.
Although Jamie P is running it, so we won't be able to see who the list of the person who's going to win the Masters this year.
No, you never know. You never know. It might not be Jamie.
Yeah, it might not, yes. There is a possibility.
Might be.
Okay. Well, without further ado, should we move into our topic of the evening?
Why not?
Cavalry.
Hang on, I'm still confused. We haven't had an hour of preamble.
We have.
Well, we have. We just haven't put it in the podcast.
Oh, sorry, Mike.
You see, it's a clever new scheme. I only record the vaguely interesting bits.
unless
you listen to Dragonstorm, they claim otherwise, but, you know, we don't pay too much attention to the people who live in the land of rain and more rain.
I don't listen to foreign podcasts.
Well, exactly. Anyway, cavalry. Do we use it?
Occasionally.
Should we be using it?
Yes.
What is it?
Well, it's horses. It's some large based models that you put to block line of sight to your entire army.
Actually, I did use them legitimately like that last year in the Masters, so I can't even joke about that.
Yeah. It's a shame when you're spending 11 points on a unit and you're sitting there thinking, the only reason I have these is so that no one can see anything behind them.
I quite like the I prefer the run them madly at the enemy just to engage them and give them something to hit that they can't avoid rather than the block of line of sight.
I've been playing Kador, so that's less of a tactic. But should we go through these in their faction order from Prime and Primal?
Firstly, should we say the difference between the two types of cavalry that we have in the game at the moment?
Well, there isn't really two different types of cavalry.
Some of them are horses, some of them are not. You mean?
Well, I was more thinking heavy cavalry and light cavalry.
There's no such thing as heavy cavalry.
They have. Or cavalry and light cavalry.
There we go.
And the different rules that they have.
Cavalry have additional rules. They don't have different rules. Cavalry have additional rules.
Or you mean light cavalry have different rules?
Actually, they do have different rules because they've had impact attacks removed.
Oh, do they still? I thought they still had them. Right, they have them removed.
No, light cavalry don't have impact attacks anymore.
Essentially, the big differences are that light cavalry, if they complete their actions, get a 5-inch reform move at the end of their activation. And
notice they have to complete their action.
Yes, and regular cavalry, when they make a charge attack, can stop at any point in their movement, and deal impact attacks to anything within 1/2 inch.
Light cavalry can also make regular melee attacks with the mount.
Ah, okay. Didn't know that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's just the layman's sort of introduction to the difference between the two types, to be honest. It's something that doesn't very often come up, but
One thing to note as well, I mean, one thing to maybe mention before we kind of get too heavily involved in the discussion on individual different units is cavalry as a whole, kind of what role does it play on the battlefield? And obviously each unit obviously has different strengths and weaknesses. And obviously the difference between cavalry and light cavalry, there are strengths and weaknesses to each one. But I mean, I just wanted to say that I particularly like at the moment cavalry as a flanking force. You tend to find the majority of the units come in around that sort of 6, 7, 9, 10 kind of point range and make good reinforcements in lists. I think they come on, obviously they're fast moving, they come on at the table edge and can cause some sort of concerns for your opponent knowing that they may be coming on any minute.
With that large base as well, allows you to get very quiet table, and the majority of them have very high speeds. So yeah, now I can see exactly where you're coming from with there.
I was going to say, the majority have them high speed. Even, although we're not discussing, even the Draken has speed 7. Yeah. So they are nippy, to say the least.
Definitely. They're handy to have and handy to kind of have as that backup there. Because, you know, if sort of the opposite flank is falling, you know, it's not impossible for them to get the majority of the way over the board in a couple of turns. So if you've kind of stacked one flank and it's falling away, then, you know, they can come on and be quite handy.
Tell you what was very interesting to look back at. Last year, and just before that, when I first started playing the game in tournaments and when Mike did as well, cavalry weren't very seen. Only a few in certain lists cavalry seemed to be about. And then with the hardcore series starting and people wanting that hard-hitting, fast-moving, flanking force, as you said, mentioned there, just how cavalry seemed to have just appeared more and more frequently within our own meta.
Partially as well, this is the result of the maturity of Mark II as it's going on. Now, I don't want to bore people too much, but in Mark I, the cavalry were... They tended to stick around a bit longer because they had more hitboxes. They were reduced for Mark II, and probably rightly so, and at the start, people didn't quite think they were worth as much of their value, so stopped using them, but then people slowly realized, actually, this would be a very nice option to have. So they've crept back into lists over time.
I think, obviously, Nick used the word meta there, and it is kind of a buzzword for obviously the way sort of a certain location plays. And I think it's as much about the meta maturing and sort of developing as much as the sort of Mark II, really, because it is kind of maybe someone takes a certain choice and then you take the cavalry to counter that, and then sort of other people take more cavalry to counter your cavalry, but then maybe another unit will appear in a few months' time and that'll be sort of to counter the cavalry. And I think it's constantly evolving. And that's another strength of the game as a whole, really, is that sort of constantly evolving nature of sort of what people take.
Absolutely.
So should we go to our first
why not?
Faction, first unit.
So if we go through through Prime, we'll start with War Machine and start with Signar.
Should we go to a resident refugee from Signar then, Nick?
So the Storm Lances, as they are in Signar, as I said, last year I used them in all three of my Masters lists, actually, and at least minimum units. All quite interestingly, unlike some of the other War Machine cavalry going to sea, they have reach all the time, which makes them a really interesting choice. They have brutal charge on top of their +2/+2 that they're gaining from being cavalry charged anyway. So their charge. So
is
charge
just +2 to the attack roll?
Oh, sorry, yeah, +2 to attack roll, and so they gain +2 to charge damage with brutal charge.
Yep.
So they become +2/+2 when charging, which is always nice.
Yeah.
And Electro Leap is fantastic. They've also got a 12-inch range shot, which gives them a little bit of range threat, and assault to go with that. So when they're charging in, they really are putting the pain on whatever they're charging in. There's regular storms, they're immune to electricity, and it means that they are absolutely fantastic at hanging around. In my opinion, anyway.
P. Kruger doesn't like them.
Just sitting there going, there's not much I can... really do over there. Someone else, help!
Warhorse Stalker.
actually had to see like them.
Apply to face, problem solved.
In my round four game against Martin Jenkins, I just had four of them just moving around the edge of the board, shooting in, whittling down his infantry. He just couldn't get rid of them because his only ranged options were chain lightning. And it was just like, okay.
Yeah, that. I think what makes them great more than anything is the fact that they've got that electro leap, which the speed they can move, the fact that they're lightning immune as well. You could do things like just bounce shots off one and boom, turn one, there's Eris gone.
They're fantastic. Yeah, you can shoot into the back of like a Stormclad or something to just zap them out, or move them up and then shoot Stormclad into the back of them is the more favoured option, and you can just knock out an Eris who's come far too close.
Not just Eris, any key model. Yeah. If maybe you are coming up against a circle player who's maybe moved one of the shifting stones up a little bit far, again, things like that, they can still do damage.
Your dice would have to be on fire to take out a shifting stone, though, with power.
Well, yeah, with Electroly, yeah. But still, I mean, it could put the damage out there for something else to do more damage to it at a later stage.
Yeah, just with their assault, they really can take down heavy targets if they need to. They can smash up a Jack. Maybe not a Kador Jack, but they can deal quite a bit of damage to a Menoth Jack or a Red
and do
Jack.
Do they have Electro Leap on the ranged attacks as well, do they?
Yes, on both the Lance and the...
So again, if you against Menoth, if you're coming up against maybe a Jack that's got a Vassal quite close behind it, or a Vassal Mechanic, or even
or the Choir.
Yeah, or the Choir. You know, that again, the assault is going to be helping you, as well as obviously the melee attacks, to kill that stuff that's in and around it, that's obviously causing you nightmares.
Then, as well as the unit, we have Catherine Lattimore, who comes to help the guys out. I'm not going to go through all her rules, as she has a ridiculous number of them, but I will go to what she does for the Storm Lances, which is she gives them something called Electrocharger. Now that basically gives them an attack and damage bonus on ranged attack rolls, as long as they're within 5 inches of her. So during that assault charge, or during the regular charge, not regular charge, the regular shots, she really, really makes those ranged attacks worth it.
Don't forget that obviously the Electro Leap won't get the bonus on the damage because that's not a ranged attack.
No, it's only on the ranged attack itself, the initial hit.
Well, the Electro Leap's not technically an attack, is it?
No, that's it.
It's just something that happens.
It's a damage roll.
Yeah. So, okay. So the Signark have they shape up pretty well. And how many points are they?
7-11.
So they're looking good for the 35-point reinforcements there. At 7 points, obviously you wouldn't be able to take them at 50 points. Or a full unit at 50 points, you could take a minimum unit with something else.
I do believe they're 7-11. I am not 100% sure now. I've got myself doubting myself.
No.
Let's check the facts.
Yes, they are. They are 7-11. And Catherine Lattimore herself... she's 5 because she's a Dragoon, remember?
Of course.
So, unlike your Kador and their optional Dragoon.
That was largely only because they didn't want to put the two models together in one box because it would be a bit too expensive.
Well, they've done that now, though.
Yes, they have, but that's largely because they've got the mass-produced plastic. Manowars, which are something akin to half the price of the old Manowars. Which is ridiculous, but very welcome. As I'll attest to with my second squad of Manowars on my desk.
Nice.
So, okay.
So who's up next? What's the next...
It's the Vengers.
Yeah, Menoth.
So,
yeah,
come on,
Kurt. That should be me, really, shouldn't it? Yes. This is where my support of the entire thing falls down completely, because I don't own any Vengers.
No.
Is there a reason you don't own Vengers?
The cost of the models to buy and the cost of putting them on the table, I think, is the biggest reason. And the fine multi-wound troops, okay, a lot slower, but the fine multi-wound troops that Menoth also has to offer.
I think they are one of the most kind of cost to affect that they've had the least value cost to effect, I think, of all the cavalry in War Machine at least.
I think, you know, just going list by list wise, they're the ones I've really seen in the fewest types of list. I've only ever really seen these in an Ekreos theme force.
I'm pretty sure I've never faced them in a tournament.
Yeah, I've seen them every now and again. Not that often, I'll admit, but every now and again you do see them.
Yeah, I can't think anybody's put them down. Somebody on Port, I'm sure, will correct me on Twitter or something, posting after this goes out, but I'm trying to think who's put them down. I think I might have faced them unpainted very early on, half put together. I can see this, I can visualise that actually, but no, I can't. As you said, it's an investment to put them on the table for what you get, and then of course the cavalry is an expensive thing to buy in the first place. Yeah. I do think
that's a valid point about all the cavalry, in that it is three to five large base models plus maybe another large base solo on top. They're not exactly cheap to go out and buy,
but also I think with the Avengers, I mean the bonus, I mean all the cavalry have the basic rules, and the stats are fairly similar across the board. But when I look at the Avengers, they've got, apart from the obviously Dungeons and Dragons cartoon reference, which is obviously very entertaining, they've got their lance is blessed, so they ignore spell effects that add to armor and defense on what they're hitting. They have battle driven. When one of them's damaged, they gain +2 strength and armor, which is kind of fairly linked to the rest of the exemplar kind of units. Yeah. After that, they don't seem to have anything else that kind of sets them out. I mean, blessed is nice, but it's not always that advantageous.
I think that the main problem with blessed is the fact that blessed is on their lance, but if you don't kill everything on the charge, the next turn you're going to be using the sword, which isn't blessed.
But true. It is a weapon master.
The sword is a weapon master, and the lance isn't. They're kind of in a very weird place at that point. It's like, yes, I can charge in. I will, you know, I'll ignore all your defense buffs.
While also being at +2 mat.
Yeah, which it means I'm going to hit. But at the same time, it hasn't got weapon master, which means their damage output is way down.
Getting the charge, so you've got the additional dice.
And potentially, if they're taking the odd plink ranged attack, they're still alive, but their power strength 16 charging.
Yeah.
That's quite. Power strength 16 plus the strength bonus. The power strength 18 with a charge attack potentially on that and first attack, but only on that first attack.
But there is that odd disparity of rules between their charge attack and their normal attack, though. So.
Totally.
Sorry, Mike. Sorry to interrupt you. How did they get to 18, though? Sorry, did you say?
Because they have battle driven, which means that if one of the units has been wounded,
yeah.
When a model in this unit is damaged, sorry.
Are they base 16?
Yeah, a base 14.
I thought base 14.
So battle driven gives them +2, and charging gives them +2. Oh no, it's +2.
+2 to hit. Yeah.
Good point. No, they haven't got the +2 damage rolls, have they? Because they've got battle driven instead.
Yeah, they're essentially +4 mat though, so they can reliably hit. But then again, that kind of comes to the blessed again, you know, kind of the majority of stuff that's got blessed on it is going to start out not the best, that's got sort of defense boosting on it is going to start out not the best defense anyway. Yeah. So then
I think they don't have anything distinctive that sets them apart. They seem to be the baseline of the cav with a bit of the exemplar flavor on top. But I kind of lose interest at that point, unfortunately. I mean, they've got a lot of flair and style, but
I think the other problem they've really got is that their cavalry dragoon doesn't really do anything for them.
I don't really want an old man on a horse. I know people disagree, and I know people who do use him and really like him, but
I see Gravis on the table more often as a solo than with the Avengers.
I think he helps all the exemplar units, though, doesn't he? He's kind of one that helps all of them, not fantastically, and not sort of one. He doesn't focus on one; he helps them all. Kind of jack of all trades, master of none, really, if you will.
Yeah, I think we'll probably see Gravis more now because of the inbuilt character restrictions.
He even knows he's about to fall off his horse.
There is that too.
His horse is tipping over forwards. Yes, because obviously you can only take. The Covenant, that's the book?
The book, yeah. The Covenant of Men.
Covenant of Men. I think you only take that in one list, and Gravis does have his aura of no stationary, no knockdown.
Yeah, that's nice.
But he doesn't specifically do anything for the Avengers. So...
their souls when they die.
Yeah, they are a bit... Well, he does that for all exemplars, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a vanilla Cav unit. And
I can't help but feel that if they just swapped them the other way around so that Blessed was on the sword, they would be better. Yeah. Because if you could have that initial, you've got the +2 mat when you charge in with the lance, smash, you can hit them, and then when you're stuck in close quarters, you can still carve through things with the debuff.
Yeah.
I think that's actually pretty legitimate. The only thing is that Menoth Cav would be scary. It's like, they're weapon masters, they're charging and they're coming at me from like 11 inches away.
Keep the weapon masters on the sword so they don't get the weapon masters on the lance.
It would just give them...
No, but I'm just saying if you swapped over the weapon master and...
I thought you just...
I just meant to swap Blessed over from the lance.
Okay.
So they keep this consistent damage output that they're always going to be rolling 3 dice of damage against you with nearly the same POW on the sword and lance. I think, is it POW 9 sword? POW 12 lance or something?
9. What, sorry?
It's 14, 9.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought we'd moved on then when I wasn't listening. Yes.
But you'd at least be able to hit because of Blessed means you're not going to get tied up in combat with some iron flesh things. You might still stand a chance to hit them.
Yeah, I like that. That would make a good swap. Obviously, it's unfortunate it's not that way. We can't write the rules, but...
I think this is something that sort of has come out over the time of Mark II, and it's probably the reason why you don't see as much Menoth Cav.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So next on to Kador.
It's like being home again.
Do you want to take this one, Mike, or
shall I? Oh, go on.
just start with Evlad and go away.
Yeah, that's it. You got the Iron Fangu lands. Obviously, they're getting benefits from Warcasters. We'll maybe touch on that in a minute. But the Ulans themselves, I think they are 7/10. I'm not sure. 7/11. Yeah, 7/11 again, yeah. They have Combat Rider, which is quite nice. That's their first special rule, which is sort of similar to the Light Cav, who get to make attacks with their mounts. This only obviously happens when they don't make a charge, but they can actually make a melee attack with the mount. They also have the +2 armor when they're in base to base with another model in the unit. And they're also getting Pathfinder on the charge, which is handy for a unit that doesn't have Pathfinder, but speed 8. Obviously, you're going to want to sort of be taking him in from funny angles, maybe over a wall or two. And the special rules keep coming as well, because the blasting lance, which they can only use on the charge, has critical knockdown.
Didn't the mount have critical knockdown
as well? Yeah, the mount has critical knockdown as well. And they have a short spear, which obviously is the one that can only make use during an activation where they didn't charge. The model cannot make initial attack with this weapon during an activation. It charged at least 3 inches. So if you charge and don't move your full 3 inches, you can't use... You can use a long lance, yeah, you can, sorry, because the lance, this weapon, can be used only to make charge attacks. When this model charges, the weapon gains reach until the if you don't move 3 inches, you don't make a charge attack.
No, so you don't.
You have to move 3 inches with the charge. Yeah. However, if my Earthborn just happens to get in melee range of that thing there, my Earthborn can steal the POW 10 off the blasting lance and beat on your caster.
It is utterly filthy. It should not be allowed, because unfortunately, like the Menoth Cav, they do lose the reach once the charge is finished.
Yeah.
Which is...
As a troll player, that's something you need to look out for as well, because obviously with the Earthborn needs to be in melee range of that weapon. It doesn't have reach as basic, it only has reach when it charges, so obviously...
It's his range.
Sorry, go on, Mike. What were you saying?
I've lost my thread of thought now. the Kador Cavalry are... I love them to bits.
Yeah.
And
you've got Markov as well that goes along with them. Kovnik Doric Markov, to be precise.
Just because we found out that name this evening. I was like, oh, really?
Oh, spread the wealth. Let everybody else know. He has the combat rider, the same one that allows him to make melee attacks with a mount if he doesn't charge. He's also got elite cadre. Elite cadre. And basically they gain practice maneuvers, which allows them to ignore other models in the unit when determining line of sight and can advance through other models in its unit if it has enough movement to move completely past them. So obviously that's not gonna, Covenant Markov isn't gonna get that. He's not gonna be able to move through them, but they can move through each other. Because obviously he's not part of the unit, he is a solo.
Yeah.
He's also got inspiration, Fire Fangulan, so if they're in his command range, they never flee and immediately rally.
I will say, the amount of times I have used his elite cadre to actually charge the rear Ulans through first.
Yes.
And go, okay, let's just see if this is in range. Oh, yes, it is. Fair enough, the whole unit's charging. It's just wonderful to be able to go, okay, this one at the back will have this insane charge angle.
Yeah.
Because people don't expect you to do the whole thing where you can charge through stuff. It's lovely.
It is very nice. It is very nice. But he's also got precision strike. So when he damages a Warjack or a Warbeast, he chooses the column that suffers the damage. His lance, his concussion lance, again, can only be used if he makes a charge attack. And he's got a warhead special rule, which means you center a 4-inch AoE on the model directly hit. Models in the AoE are hit and suffer a power 10 blast damage roll. The damage roll is not considered to be caused by a melee attack. On a critical hit, models in the AoE are knocked down, and this model is not affected by warhead. So obviously, if you're charging stuff that your Ulans are already there, then they will be affected by warhead. So the trick is to get him in there first of all, or charge at a different target altogether. And you go for those high defense sort of, obviously, Kaize can't get statistics with it because they're immune to the blast damage.
Fair, charging your own Reinhold in the back to get the 4-inch AoE off is... Yeah, obviously as a mercenary now, I wouldn't recommend it, but, you know, for Kador, that is a wonderful way of just having a nice 4-inch pyre plate all over your opponent's Nis.
Again, he's got the short spear and the critical knockdown on his mount as well. So he does kind of quite a lot for the... For the cavalry.
I would say, though, for anyone using him, watch it, because he doesn't have Pathfinder on the charge.
No.
He may have trained all of these men and, you know, led them into countless battles, but for some reason, he's forgotten to send his horse over rough terrain.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Never quite worked that one out.
Needs some practice in the show jumping.
For 7-11, I do think Kador Cav are worth it in every single respect, except for losing reach. But you know,
and what's quite nice as well is again that 7 points for the reinforcements at 35 points. Obviously, Markov is 4 points, so you know, as opposed to going 7-11 on the full unit, you can go supposedly 7-11, obviously for a minimum unit with Markov as well. So that makes that quite nice to kind of have that.
Yeah,
the same points level or 15 points for all six of them.
We should probably move on from the Kador line now, to be honest.
Yeah. I think it's maybe time to move on to Crix.
So, yeah. Nick.
Back to me.
Well, you're the closest thing we've got to a Crix player, to be honest.
Certainly not me.
So, Crix are a little different from all the other War Machine factions in the fact that they have the light cavalry option rather than the heavy cavalry option. This does knock a point off them, make them a little bit cheaper. Makes them 6-10 rather than 7-11. They're coming in with their three basic attacks. They've got a reach scythe, a non-reach scythe, sickle, and a mount attack. Going down in power, I think it's like 13, 12, 11, maybe a bit. I've not got the exact details in front of me. But they go down in power as you go down them. The sickle has life drinker on it, so they can get a bit of healing. And they can grab souls and buy and sell attacks, really.
You're clearly going quite mad doing this.
Yeah. They can use them to do the regular soul tricks of getting to more attacks and boosting attacks and things like that.
That lance and the scythe, are they again similar to the other cav where you can use one, not the other, or are they?
It's just a big bucket of attacks, and you say, you know, I'll take all of them, please. It's Crix. Why would you not have access to all of the attacks?
You have three initial attacks with the cav. Yeah. But that's it. They don't have any other special rules other than we have souls. We have souls. over and dead. We have three attacks.
Those souls are pretty useful as well, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Having seen James Brown at the local club mince things with two units of Soul Hunters.
With his Coven Tier 4 list that gives them all a soul to start with and takes two units of them. Yeah, they make people cry.
Yeah, it is enough to make you just weep openly sometimes, like, okay.
It used to be a staple with Epic of Success as well, before his feat was changed to not allow large base models to be brought back. Because they were very effective under his feet, but obviously we don't want to be reminiscing too much.
Yeah.
So their solo is Darrow Grafe, who I'm sure a lot of you, if you've ever played Crix, will have seen, because he sees the table with or without Soul Hunters. He doesn't need them to be damn good. I'm going to ignore all the good stuff he does and just concentrate on his leadership. His leadership of Soul Hunters mean that Soul Hunters activating in his command range gaining corporeal for the activation. But that is for the activation only. So it allows them to charge through things or anything like that. But once their activation's done, they become corporeal again.
I would say, if you're going to try this, be very, very careful. Don't charge through, say, Precursor Knights. Because they'll go, you're charging through us. Okay, we'll use our magical weapons for free strikes.
We've had some fun games with the troll, Creel Stone, and stopping them... turning them back corporeal halfway through models.
Oh, yeah.
that could get a bit tricky.
Well, technically, you frag yourself.
Doesn't quite.
So what does happen in that situation? Then it's...
You can't do the charge because you wouldn't be able to make it through the...
Well, the charge is broken at that point and would become a failed charge at the start of the base you're passing through, I think. Right. Well, I think we may have to look that one up.
There was a situation where the same thing happened with me and Liam Jordan in a tournament where he was Maelok. And the day it was ruled to dice it, and when we asked on the PP forums, I believe it was ruled that you wouldn't be able to make the charge.
Fail charge.
You would just fail charge as soon as you touched the piece of terrain.
Oh, see, you would have to commit to the charge, but you
commit to
fail
the charge,
it.
And you fail it, yeah.
Okay. So it's not like you can't charge, is that, yeah.
You just fail at the point where it would become illegal after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he does lend them quite a nice little bit there.
Again, I mean, most armies don't have that ability to take away in corporal, so, or do they have access to those magic attacks?
Actually, there is an extra thing on Darrarath for... the Soul Hunters, and that's his Death Ride ability. The one that gets that little bit of movement extra, because they really needed it.
Yeah, well,
because they're
eight.
Not Speed 8 yeah. anyway. Speed 8, I think there's only one Speed 9 Cavalry in the game, and we'll get to them when we get to Legion.
Yes, moving on from the Crix then. It's time for...
Mercenaries.
Yeah, I was just going to do... We do Mercs or Rhett first, and it's...
Retribution. They're a proper faction.
You're fired.
It's like a million mercenary voices screamed out all at once.
And one punched you in the face.
So Retribution.
By the way, Nick, sorry, coming back to the Legion. Aren't the only Speed 9. The Circle Wolf Riders.
Oh, are they? Okay, yeah. Didn't know that. But anyway, Retribution. We're talking War Machine right now. New out this year? No, not this year anymore, but they were new out last year.
Yeah, these are one of the units
you're
that took
a, little bit behind,
a while to come out. There's sort of rumours that they were meant to be plastic, then they weren't meant to be plastic, then they were meant to be plastic, and then they finally came out in metal.
Did they? I can't even remember anymore.
Yeah.
So they're the only
cavalry that have been released as a single box set for all five. So they're somewhat costly for all five, but... I think from working it out compared to buying the box of three and then additional two, it is actually the same price. So you're not paying more for them, although it is one big chunk.
Yeah.
Kind of a little off-putting for some people, I imagine.
Well, back onto what they do on the table. I'm still actually confused as to why Retribution are using horses. I thought they would have some sort of mechanical equivalent, but anyway.
Oh, it should have been on... On the birds, I can't think what they're called now.
Should have been on motorcycles.
Yeah, having seen Fenris on a motorcycle, which was top-notch, by the way, They don't really fit the Iron Kingdoms too well, but they do look very metal.
Is that one of Spud's? The Fenris?
No, that was that Devil Squid, wasn't it?
Oh, is it Devil Squid?
Could well have been. It was yeah, a lovely pink lovely conversion army. Piece.
But no, Destus. So they have a cannon on their lance, which has dual shot. Work that one out. My cavalry is going to stand here so they gain an extra shot. Okay. Yeah. They have a high-powered lance, but it's a lance that can only be used on the charge. And it has reach. And they have a low-power mount attack. Yes, they have no equivalent melee weapon that can be used in melee.
Do they not have gunfighter?
They have gunfighter for the lance cannon. So you know I can't stab you with this lance, but I can shoot you with it.
Works for me.
It's just they're unwieldy and not got the reverse option or a sword, because that's the way that the Ulans work. They have they use the reverse of the lance post range. You snigger, but that is what they do.
The gun's on the backside. So as they're charging, they accidentally pulled the trigger. Aww.
Shuffle their mates behind them. Yeah, that works.
They can also, once they get
they're
into melee...
They're highly trained.
So they charge into melee. They don't kill what they're in melee with. So the next round of they survive the counterattack. So the next round, they stand to gain the aiming bonus and get the dual shot, and then they just shoot twice in melee.
No, we should know they don't get the aiming bonus for it, because you can never get that in melee.
But they, by standing still to aim, they gain dual shot, which allows them to shoot twice.
Basically, that just means they're firing wild into the melee.
But with gunfighters, is that not they make a melee attack?
No, that's
point blank.
Point blank. Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry.
Big me's.
So they can make ranged attacks in melee range, can't they?
Yeah.
There is also another point where when they're actually in melee, they gain unyielding, so they're plus two arm, which is just.
So does that put their armor to? Is that are they armor 16 or 18 or basic?
So yeah, the retribution cav are armor 17. So with unyielding going up to 19. Mm-hmm. So that's the same as the Kador one, isn't it?
Yeah, so Varus in there with them. Yeah.
And 21 is that's pushing it over the edge of being pretty hard. They're not exactly what you call high power, to be honest.
I think these guys will get a bit more use than the Menothans, but not too much. Mostly because their casters all seem to be able to give them something. I mean, they like shooting. They've got access to snipe. They've got access to quicken. They've got casters that boost ranged output damage. They're all right.
I think the main stumbling block for the Destors is purely the fact you've got to buy them in one go. Even with my Kador ones, I bought unit of three and then two extra at a later date. Having to buy five all at once, it's such a big investment.
A few people off.
So,
and then their Fane Knight Scarith Issian doesn't actually do anything for them. Just like Gravis, he has the same. When something dies, he gains plus some strength and some armor, and that's sort of it. He likes things to die around him. You don't really want your cavalry big investment things dying.
No.
Well, you don't necessarily always want them dying, but then again, you know, sometimes stuff does die. Why not get a bonus from that?
Words of wisdom there from Alex.
Why not get a bonus from it? You know, if it's dying anyway, you know, if you're entering into peace trading, which is obviously something a lot of people are willing to do, then peace trade to your favour.
But his ability kicks off with any living friendly retribution model. So why would you sacrifice your cavalry for it?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying sacrifice cavalry, but, you know, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying he doesn't do anything for them, really. And they don't do anything for him.
No, he's not. I mean, like you say, he's not doing that much for them, which is...
They just both happen to be on horses.
Yeah.
There's a few like that.
He's come to think of them as people he met.
Cannon fodder.
Speaking of cannon fodder.
Circle?
Should we move on to Mercs?
Oh.
Oh, come on, that cav isn't going to last too long.
Oh,
that's true.
Yes, mercenaries have the Steelhead Cavalry.
Which are pretty good cavalry by all standards.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is that Steelhead Cavalry are something of an oddity. On their own, they are extremely pillow-fisted. They can't really hit anything. And their range weapon is only range 8, so they haven't really got much of a chance at range. However, once you add in the Steelhead Halberdiers, it all starts to look a lot brighter. Because the one key rule with Steelhead Cavalry is the fact they have flank Steelhead Halberdier. Which means that they're ultimately on +2 to the attack rolls and an extra damage die. Which, when you're coming in, boosts them up to... Say they're charging in. If they've got the flank bonus as well, they're up to mat 9 on the charge. Their axes are PNS 11, which means you're at sort of PNS 11 with Weapon Master, essentially, for charges, and Backswing. They're a lovely, lovely collection of rules, so long as you have flank.
Yeah, sometimes. And also they have a cavalry solo that does quite a bit for the middle.
Pardon?
Stannis.
Does Stannis Brocker, does he not do quite a bit for them?
Stannis adds something to the unit in that they get he has Tactician Steelhead, which means that any Steelheads in his command range can see and move and charge and do whatever they like through other Steelheads. Which is, that's pretty nice to be able to do, especially seeing as you've got flank, which means you can sort of line stuff up 2 inches away and just charge straight through it with the cavalry. To try and get the reach of the cavalry onto things behind, just in case you kill the stuff in front. My
favourite part of the mercenary cav, the steelhead cav, is their scornergy. The fact that they've got assault and that flank bonus. And just watching people, the first time they use them, charge in with assault when their steelhead halberdiers are already engaged. And watching them blow their own halberdiers away.
I did actually.
Doesn't get old.
Yeah, the first time I charged with them that night, I did have to get the PP forums because I had at least 4 different versions of who can and can't be targeted by a missed assault shot. And these ranged from it's all the enemy models in melee you can hit to it's everything in melee, including the model that fired can be hit and.
What? No!
And I was just sat there going, but because technically, according to the missed shot rules, because you are within the melee range,
you can't target yourself.
Of the thing you missed,
you can't target yourself.
Where does it say you can't target yourself?
You can't target.
Has anyone ever tried to target themselves with a ranged attack?
Well, no. The targeting rules are universal, and you can target yourself with spells.
Wow, I'm going to have one of my models kill themselves on the field.
It was one of those awkward moments where sitting there going, we have no idea how to sort this out. Okay, let's play this how best we think it is. And eventually have got an answer off the PP forums that just, it was the least useful one, which means you can shoot your own halberdiers in the back of the head.
But don't forget, obviously, you're ignoring the +4 in melee bonus.
Oh yes,
you
absolutely.
Melee with them. So
however, they are still rat 5.
There is that.
Which means they work perfectly with Damiano and his Deadeye.
Yes. So another thing that does add well to them is Damiano. He's quite good with them.
Well, on the charge with Damiano under feet turn, they suddenly become PNS 14. And the next turn will be armor 19, which makes them fantastic cavalry.
Power 14 weapon masters. Ow.
Yes, taking down scorn beasts in one go is just absolutely wonderful. But the mere fact that you're going in, you're getting impact attacks, then you're getting the backswing. If you've got Deadeye on you, you can take an assault shot as well. So the amount of stuff they can put out in any one go can be absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
It just might not hit. Or if it does hit, or if it does hit, it might not hit the thing you originally targeted.
There is.
Yes. But the
always
the
key, a chance of that happening.
Yeah. Key thing to remember with them, flank. Just make sure you've got halberdiers. You might only have one left, but one is enough.
Yeah. Good enough.
Okay.
So on to Horde, shall we move now?
Should we leave this one to Nick and Kurt?
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, the first one.
I've heard of Hordes.
You
don't want me to just gush, do you, really?
Oh, Tuffalos!
Just go for it, Kurt.
I like Tuffalos. When it went from Mark 1 to Mark 2, I saw everybody's cavalry around me flailing, dying, losing stats, losing abilities. And briefly in the playtest, the troll cav took a bit of a hit. But then in the final version, they bounced straight back up to exactly where they were. They're the only cav that maintained the 8 wounds. They managed to somehow keep tough to go with it as well. They kept their armor. If anything, they hit better than before. They're more like champions on Bison now than they ever were before. The only way you can make them better is to give me 2 attacks. Please, that'd be fantastic. No, they're just great.
Bull Rush is technically 2 attacks.
True, I was thinking 2 reach attacks with the axe. I was being rude. they hit like a ton of bricks. They've got multiple different attack kind of options with slams, with the fact that they can slam. And they can mix a mixture of slam and charges in the same unit and same activation thanks to the Bull Rush order. They hit well. The faction's got a ton of buffs to stack on significant models, you know, putting Fiery Fists or actually it's the best one really, but because Rage doesn't always work well with them, but Fiery Fists on them means that they hit really, really, really nicely. Yeah.
They are the best cav in the game.
7-11.
I will state that, and I don't think anyone will argue. They are the best cavalry in the game.
It's the fact they've got more damage boxes than anything else. They've got permanent reach. And for what it's worth, they've got tough as well. Yep. Which is...
Power 14 mount doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, that's only tied with some of Kador's, but...
Power 12 on the axe, which goes to 14 on the charge, because they've got brutal charge. Power 14 on the mount. Pseudo 2 attacks with Bull Rush. Just being able to slam through high defense things. They're crazy. They're brilliant. And then Horthal just makes them even better.
If I could have a unit of Manowar Cav, I would say those were better, but unfortunately I can only have the solo. So, yeah. Horrible Cav.
A unit of Dracoons would be quite nice.
It would be utterly filthy, but it would be utterly lovely at the same time.
When we inevitably get the light pig cav, I don't think they're ever going to see table time.
Yeah, that ain't happening for a while, though.
Well, to give trolls light cav, it depends what they do and how fast they are and what they're riding.
Light pig cav. Pigs!
It would be light. It'd have to be a contrast, to be different.
It would be good to see pigs on pigs.
Pigs on pigs.
PYGs on PIGs.
Yeah, I'm there with that. That's fantastic.
Oh, dear.
Scott, following on from the scouts here.
Should we move it on to Horthal?
Talking pig riders.
What do we need to say about Horthal?
He's amazing. He makes them better. It's a 5-point solo that you put on. He's good enough on his own. But actually, when you put him in your list, when I put him in my list, actually, I think about everything he does after the fact that it gives all the Tuffalo an extra dice on all their mount attack rolls.
On the impact attacks.
On the mount attacks, yeah.
And he gives them follow-up, doesn't he?
Yes. It's lovely. And then he does stuff himself.
Yeah. Bonkers.
Big Phil's, hammer.
There is a reason that James Brown used to say that my list contained Mulg plus his UA of Horthal with the unit of Long Riders, and then I choose the caster.
Yeah, pretty much. That is kind of how you work.
But I can't do that under character restrictions.
Ah, what a shame.
I really feel for you.
Can we move on to something interesting now?
Yeah.
So
how dare you? How dare you?
Well, I was going to say, if it's interesting, it wasn't going to be circles, Cav. God.
Yeah, well, as we mentioned a little while ago, they are one of the only two Speed 9 cavalry models. They're light cavalry again, as you would expect Speed 9. So they're getting all that additional sort of attack goodness and the initial moving goodness, sorry. They also have assault with their thrown javelins, which are weapons masters with as well, which is quite handy. You see how they've got luck, so they can re-roll the missed attack rolls with the javelins, so that can kind of help mitigate sort of targeting any of your own models. They're rat 6 as well, so it gives them the extra bonus to that.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, they've got Hunter, so they ignore forest concealment and cover when determining line of sight or making missed attacks, which is also quite handy. They've obviously got Pathfinder. You'd hope they'd have Pathfinder with Hunter.
They've got that horrible, horrible combination of Pathfinder, Hunter, and Prey.
Yes, that's an actual Prey.
admit it, you know, Prey. They can just go, you know what, I'll just walk into combat with you. It's fine, you know. Because they can charge, they can charge 12, but you've got to be within 10 for the plus 2 movement. I think that's
well. The hand thing about that is you can get the models in the back of the unit are a little bit further away, or you can get to leapfrog other stuff. If you're within 10 inches of the prey unit and you want to get something behind them, obviously you can't leapfrog over the models as such, but you know you can use that additional movement to kind of get around. If you position them well and your enemy kind of doesn't commit too much with the prey unit, you can use them to kind of shimmy around and do a few nice little tricks for them. But yeah, that puts them at a 14 inch charge. No reach, unfortunately. That's a shame. no, I think they'd be fairly broken with reach. They're only power plus strength 9 as well. They're only power plus strength 9, so they're not massively powerful. Obviously, if you're attacking the prey model, it goes up to 11, but, you know, they're not massively powerful. But yeah, they're very good at harrying and kind of causing a nuisance of themselves. And I really like these as well because they're 6'10 as well. So they're really good at the 50 points reinforcement level as well.
These are light cav again, aren't they?
Light cav, yeah.
Yeah, so once again, it's the light cav seem to drop a point below the regular cav.
Well, I was going to say the steelhead cav are 6'10. For heavy cav,
yeah.
which means for them for reinforcements, you can go. I will have a minimum unit of halberdiers and a minimum unit of cavalry. Job sorted.
So yeah, but that's sort of because they're that synergistic style and their mercenary stuff. Everything's slightly cheaper than.
It's the opposite of merc tax.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I thought mercs paid a tax.
Yeah, clearly they don't.
To make them work, you have to pay for more mercs. So,
I think I'll be honest. The whole 6 and 10, it seems to be very much sort of on what level they are, because the circle wolf riders are not the best regarded cav in the game. I mean, they've got a very nice collection of rules, but they're more with that ranged attack. They're almost more harassment than they are anything definitely. Else. Especially with the light cav rule of, I've completed my action, I'll take a 5-inch move backwards. That's the whole thing where they could move through a forest, throw off some javelins, and then just walk straight back through and be invisible again. And if you move forward, you're getting charged. That's potentially horrible.
Not nice.
Admittedly, you need the board set up to do it, and at most tournaments, you're lucky if you get anything more than 3 pieces of scenery.
A bit cynical there.
We shall have this tree in one corner, this building in the other corner.
I'm going to love it. If
and a linear obstacle in the middle.
And there was just butt tons of scenery. And Mike
there won't be.
I would love it if there was, though, because it would be funny.
I'm going to turn up just a laugh at the lack of scenery. You're going to have tables with, like, 2 windmills on again, aren't you?
And a wall.
Oh, sorry. You'll only have the wall because Janissa will be there. Let's face it.
Only in one list.
Yeah, only in one list. Well, let's stop Kurt playing it incessantly.
What? No. Whatever do you mean?
But anyway, moving on from the circle.
We haven't done their solo yet.
Well, Wolf Lord Morag, he doesn't really give anything to them.
Bash. He's more Wolves of Orbros, isn't he?
Yes, he holds the Wolves of Orbros. He likes the Wolves of Orbros, but yeah, he doesn't really add anything to the Wolf Riders, unfortunately.
I was going to say, his foot model's quite nice, but his wolf model is
a little rat-like.
Yeah, it's...
No, I mean, I thought that when I looked at the pictures, but actually having the model in hand, it's not as bad. I think the problem is with the shots that PP have got in the book is that it's kind of taken on from a funny angle that makes the head look a lot shorter than it actually is in real life. I mean, yeah, we'd like it. It's not the most wolf-like looking of models, but it does look a lot better in the flesh than it does on those pictures.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another of your factions then. The cavalry you don't really see.
What do you mean you don't really see them? Yeah, I've seen these quite a bit.
I've played one unit of these, ever. And that was as reinforcements.
Well, I mean, these are standard cavalry. They're not light cavalry. They do have a few nice rules, though. Formerly, with the leap rule that they've got, which allows them, obviously, after they advance to be placed within 5 inches of the, I think it's completely within, isn't it? It's jump, in fact. Yeah. After the normal movement, to make a full advance, but before performing an action, you can place this model anywhere completely within 5 inches of its current location. Any effects that prevent it from charging also prevent it from using jump. They've got the combat rider, so obviously when they don't make a charge, which they're not going to be doing with that jump, they can make an attack with a mount. And they have brutal charge, which is a bit of scornergy, to coin the phrase. And again, +2 to charge attack damage rolls with the spear. So it's kind of bizarre that they've got this thing that allows them not to charge, and then they have something that gives them bonus on a charge.
I suppose it depends on what you're going for. If you're facing a shield wall unit, well, you're better off walking up and jumping behind them. If you're facing something that's good armor all around, then you're better off just smacking it in the face.
I mean, they've got steady as well, which allows them to, be calmly knocked down. But one thing that jump can be quite useful for, which is kind of jumping the gun a little bit onto their character solo, which is Tyrant Redeem, which grants them a bonus for him being in their line of sight. So obviously, if you're leaving him back to charge at a later time, or, you know, if you charge him at a funny angle and he's sort of a charge wouldn't quite put them in, because when you charge, you have to turn to face, a charge wouldn't put them in line of sight. You can use that jump to kind of get him in line of sight, and he gives them +2 to attack rolls while in the line of sight, so you know, that can be quite handy. So if you are charging,
well, essentially that replaces the +2 map from a normal cavalry charge, doesn't it?
That's it.
So
But I mean, if you are getting the charge as well, though, if you're getting the charge, you're on +4 to hits, so that puts you if you're on the charge and you're getting his line of sight, you're on +4 to hit roll, which effectively puts you at mat 10, and you're on +2 to the charge attack damage roll as well, which is power +14. So it's nothing to be kind of turning your nose up at. It's still very effective. It's just kind of you have to make sure with your placement and your angles that you're doing it right.
Fair enough.
I mean, coming on to him as well, he's got combat rider, so he can make that attack if he doesn't charge. He's a ragoon. He has evasive, so he can't be targeted by free strikes, and he can move 2 inches after if a ranged attack that misses it. Obviously, that's enemy. So it immediately moves 2 inches if you miss him. He's got the jump rule. He's got steady again. He's got a veteran leader, and his spear, which is power strength 12, is armor piercing. So he gets obviously half armor. With medium or larger bases, and +2 to damage rolls against small models.
Yeah, that's painful.
The place I've mostly seen these is Tsar lists, because in Tsar lists, they are beautiful and amazing beasts. But then I've seen them in a couple of, I think it's Morgul lists as well. So, I mean, they do see the table time. I don't know why you don't think you've seen them that much, Mike, because I've seen them.
I was going to say, I don't think I've seen that much because I've only ever played them once. The once I've played them, they had Defender's Ward on them and just sort of potted around a board edge and didn't do much. And that was it.
Zol plays them very aggressively, much like how troll players play their long riders and charge them right up into your face. Zol will do the same with them, and will put them right there and say, right, you kill these? Yeah. Oh, you didn't kill them right now. They've got last stand and they're jumping.
This was a Zol list, and the guy had charged them down one flank, ignoring the fact that there was a big piece of terrain there that we'd said, you couldn't move through, and that was it.
In which case, I can only assume that the player you played against just didn't play them to the full effect.
Yeah. But like I said, I've seen them once, ever, and that's it.
Yeah.
I've seen Avengers more.
I think with some of those Avengers, it's kind of a personal playstyle choice. I think some people like them, some people don't like them. And, you know, I've played against them quite a bit, and they can be quite effective. They can, with that sort of seeing, if they're able to see Radim, if he sort of gets behind the unit that they're charging, charges something else on the other side of them, jumps over them and sort of attacks something behind them, you know, he's not got to be able to see them, it's them seeing him. So, you know, it doesn't really matter too much about which way you face him. But if you can get them facing towards him somehow, then it's very effective.
Okay, cool.
Should we move on to Legion?
Well, it's on to our last cavalry.
It is indeed.
Until they come up with minion pig cavalry.
That's going to be just a horrendous sight.
Some weird mental combinations that spring to mind there of something mounted on crocodiles or pigs, boar with...
Boars on hogs, literally on motorcycles.
Hot pig on pig action.
Steam Murray's. Yeah,
all there's going to be Arcadius trying to recreate Soul Hunters, but with pigs. Already done once, actually. They look a bit similar to...
Pig Tours.
Well, there's some weird some two-legged with a big, like, wide, thick tie motorcycle rear end of a pig of some description in 40K somewhere. I think in the Orcs somewhere or something like that.
I
think that's something you may have seen on a bad trip, Kurt, if I'm honest.
I don't know what you're trying to say about me.
I know there was all the Speed Freak stuff, but I don't remember anything like that in Orcs.
Anyway, should we move on to cavalry that... I hate to bring it crashing back to reality, but to cavalry that actually does exist.
The Raptors.
Why not?
See, when I heard the name, I got very excited because the idea of elves riding raptors just seemed awesome in my mind. And they turned out to be elk.
Yeah, I think even if they'd have been birds that they were riding on, you know, bird like, is it chocobo? Is that what they're called? Sort of anime birds. I mentioned that obviously for the retribution. It'd be nice to
see. What are you talking about? They should have been on velociraptors.
No, I know, but obviously a raptor is also a bird of prey. Yeah. Even if they were on birds, I think that would be quite nice. It would reflect the army, the speed. I don't quite get the reindeer thing. But, I mean, nonetheless, they're nice models. I really like them. I think they're quite effective in the game as well.
They're nice models.
We've not got any Legion players, have we? So
the blightedness on reindeers. They're all right, but okay.
Having seen a Doom Reaver army... literally ripped to shreds.
Oh yes, they're effective. They're effective on the board. I'm just talking about the models themselves at the moment. If you want me to go into the rules of them, they've got standard Nis claymores, so Pow 9 weapon masters. They've got Nis longbows, which are Pow 12 with poison, so they can literally destroy living models. I think they're range 12 or 14. My Legion book's at my girlfriend's. So I don't know.
That's what they always say.
My girlfriend's the Legion player. Ask her.
Should we have her as a guest on the show, then, if she's a Legion player, since we don't have any Legion players?
Maybe not. They're like Cav again. They've got three basic attacks, one being a ranged attack, then the Claymore and the Mount. They've got Pathfinder, and they're just hideously efficient for 6/10. Hideously efficient. And then Anissa just... gives them +2 to hit on both ranged and melee. And it's just like, thank you very much, we'll take that.
Yeah, she's another one that really, really does help the unit out quite a lot.
She's exactly the same as the Scorn one. +2 to hit and ranged while you can see her. But she's just... I mean, they've both got prey as well, just like the Circle ones. The main cavalry don't have prey. Anissa has prey.
Like she needs prey.
And then she's got Snapfire, which is brilliant.
Just for no apparent reason, what can we think of? Should we give a parry as well? Yeah, why not?
it's the stealth that really gets me. How are you stealthy running around on that freaking reindeer?
On the reindeer with the metal-tipped antlers.
With reindeer a giant overcoat softly. As well.
How many times have you heard Father Christmas on your roof?
The bells, man. The bells.
The bells.
No, I've only heard him annually. So, not that often.
There we go. But yes, I do not like Legion Cav.
In fairness, it's not really the hooves you hear, it is the sleigh. It's the big bump.
The fact that they can walk 9 and then shoot another 12 inches is ridiculous.
No, walk 9, shoot 12, then walk back 5. That is the point at which you're just snarling and going, why did I pick a melee army? Yeah, just no.
Again, they're very good at harassing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when they go to things like Elilith, Paincushion, just, you don't even want to know.
Plus, if they're facing other hordes with those poisoned bows, yeah, that gets quite tasty, really.
Well, I mean, the only thing they're not going to be really effective against is Krix, really, or maybe Maelok.
Or an all-Warjack army.
Well, yeah, but then again, I mean, even against an all-Warbeast army, they're not going to be that effective. What's the power on the... On the cross, on the bows?
Was it power 10?
Power 10s, yeah. Standard Nith. Yeah, power 10, standard Nith loadout.
Power 10 with yeah. Weapon Master, essentially.
It's not too bad.
Average damage roll of 19. So if you've got the full unit, that's, you know, between 5 and 10 points of damage on a beast in a turn.
Yeah.
That's enough to take an aspect and prepare it for one of your hideously overpowered Legion beasts to rip the thing a new one.
Yeah. It's not quite as shabby as I first thought, but...
Yeah. It's, when you think of it in those terms, it's like, okay, that's pretty mean.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. They're very nice. They are. They're like a lot of Legion, though. They're very effective. And are they 6'10 again, or are they slightly more?
They're 6'10 again. They are like half.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean, they're the best of the light cav units by quite a long way. With the addition of Anissa as well, that makes them very good. Which kind of brings us on to a good point. I mean, do you want to kind of rate which cavalry unit you think is the best in the game, or try and leave it at what we've done? Yeah, Trollkin, I think that's a good shout.
Long Riders are by far the best cavalry in the game.
I think they'll have a ranged attack.
They're the best all round.
Do they need a ranged attack?
No, but I think if the next thing, nearest thing for me that gives them a run for the money is probably the Signar. Playing across against them. Just that they are more versatile, I would say.
Well rounded.
Yeah, you've got a lot of different options at different points in the game. They've got an answer to different situations. Deal with high def troops if they need to, that kind of thing. It's
See, I'd have been edging it with Kador, saying that they are very tough when they need to be. And on the charge, you're looking at POW 16s with crit knockdown.
Yeah, they are. I wouldn't say Kador are the best.
Well, I'm not going to say they're better than the Troll ones, but I think they're giving the Signar a run for their money.
Yeah. I think that the Signar are for more versatility.
Yeah.
I think the issue that the Signar have got is they've got other units that offer that versatility and more, really. So that is why they don't see as much playtime as maybe they would in another faction.
Yeah.
So I think they are good. I don't know if they're better than Trollkin, though. I'd probably look at maybe Trollkin first and maybe put in the Nis second, the Raptors.
Interesting.
Stunned silence again.
Yeah, I'm just
you have a tendency to create them, Alex, so, you know.
Just thinking about what we see on the table, and Long Riders you see all the time. The number of people that swear down the club each time I put Long Riders down on the table, like, do you not own any other infantry? It's like, well, no, Long Riders and Scouts, all the way, baby.
And fairness, I see Long Riders at my kitchen table and I'm not even playing War Machine. You're right, you see them everywhere.
Raptors are probably the next best one, the next one you see most often. When you start to look at Signar, Kador, and stuff like that, Signar, you've only sort of seen it more recently after Mr. Galea pulled out that Ihali list.
And even then you don't see them.
E who, sorry?
E Halley.
Haley.
Would that be E Haley?
Yeah, I think
it's H-A-L-E-Y, Halley.
Haley.
H-A-L-E-Y, Halley. Halley.
Everyone else says Haley.
H-A-Y-L-E-Y.
Including the people who wrote it and created it, so I think we have to go. It's like saying, it's like the people who insisted on saying Cador. Even I've dropped it now.
Fair enough. Anyway, you've not picked up on this. I've been saying Halley for ages.
We're ignoring it.
I've been mentally correcting you, don't worry.
Anyway, yes, no one really plays the Signal ones. In main 50-point tournament list, you don't see them all that often. So that's probably why I got away with playing them so well last year, was because no one really knew what they were going to be doing. Cador ones, you see them with Evlad, and that tends to be it. You don't see them all that often.
I was going to say, I'm one of the few people who plays cavalry outside of Evlad for Cador. And with Peace Orchard, they can work absolute wonders. She doesn't offer them anything much apart from the ability to actually, you know, hit.
When you start to look at how much table time each of the factions get, it has to just go down to Trolls and Legion.
I think the Circle one might see a bit more table time as well, with them being that kind of 10 points for the reinforcements. I think you may well. I mean, you may not. It's something that I've contemplated taking in one or two of my lists as a reinforcement for Masters.
It is one of the quick, easy drop-ins for reinforcements, yeah. Isn't it? Cavalry, because you've got that much speed. And they none of the cavalry in the game at the moment are slouches at melee at all. Yeah. They can all pull their weight. It's just quite a heavy investment.
Yeah, definitely. Or
the question is that investment worth it?
That's the big question. That's the question for every single unit, you know, is... and that really is a question for the rules developers. Are they balanced? I think the majority of them are. I think they are worth the points. I think they.
Yeah. I think there were another one of these units that when they were first introduced, there was a lot of doom talk, and they've turned out to be just another unit in the game. Yeah. Really, there's something you take when it's appropriate and ignore the rest of the time.
Yeah, yeah. So that pretty much kind of wraps up our discussion on the cavalry for now. Then. Unless anybody else has got anything they want to add.
I think we're about done.
Good thing. So should we take a little break?
Yeah, why not? Let's go for a break and see you all on the other side. Okay, well, welcome back from the break. We're going to move on to... you might want to brace yourself this here, because we've got a feature that's coming back for... You know, it's second week in a row. We're trying to make it a regular thing again. It's Spelling It Out. And this week, we're going for Marcus Siege Brisbane. And for that, we will pass over to the man who's probably played in the most here, Nick.
Yay!
Being the only rules, one who's played Signor.
Well, I'd say, I'd go further, and I'd say the only man is not ashamed to admit he's played Signor.
What's wrong with
Siege? That's the appropriate phrase.
What's wrong with Signor?
Nothing wrong with Siege at all.
They're bent and dirty. Moving on.
Nothing wrong with Siege. Siege is an honourable man.
So, fair enough.
The rest of the faction is bent.
Moving on.
He's an honourable man who should really come over to Mercs as soon as possible.
Moving on to Siege.
It's weird, but I see him in red. And I don't even play Kador.
Since we thought that Masters and Welsh were coming up, we thought we would go with one of the A-lister casters that you're likely to see these weekends. And one of Signar's favourite tricks to pull out the bag is Siege Brisbane. Got a few nice little tricks, a few you'll know, a few you won't. So if we start with his spell list, we can ignore his feet for now and go for his spell list. First spell of the day is Explosivo. I think there's only a few of the casters in the game that have this, most of them being Merc ones. Would I be right in that?
And a troll.
Explosivo, there's one dwarf and one troll, I think.
One dwarf and one ex-Signarian troll, if I'm right.
Well, yes.
He stole it and ran away with it. Basically, it makes whatever ranged attack that you... The next ranged attack that the model you put it on makes becomes a magic attack, so gains the magic weapon quality, and gets an AoE 3 if it's not an AoE already. Doesn't help... You can't use it in a combined ranged attack or anything like that. It has to be just a single shot on its own.
You can't use it on a spray, even though that would be hilarious.
That could be quite funny,
and
actually.
It must be a normal attack.
Yeah, it must be a normal ranged attack that you do it for. But it works quite well for shooting at Menoth Jacks, works quite well for shooting at incorporeal models, works quite well for shooting into the wind wall that Bork has put up. And it only costs one focus as well, so it's quite handy to spam out on a few Jacks. Like,
I take it, it's
defenders.
Not upkeep.
No, it's not upkeep.
It can become a bit expensive once you get sort of more than two or three models. But yeah, it's a nice utility piece.
Yeah. His second spell of the day is Foxhole, which allows you to drop a 5-inch template anywhere in his control area. Models in there are becoming immune to blast damage. They gain the cover benefit, and they do not count as intervening models. So he can drop this on his own units, give them cover, make it so that you can... Jacks and things behind them can shoot through them. Or alternatively, one of the favourite tricks, and something that I've seen a ridiculous number of people fall for, whether you know it or not, is watching him drop a foxhole onto a load of intervening models so he has a clean line of sight to your caster and blowing your caster away.
Pro tip, don't drop it on a unit screening him.
I haven't actually seen that one done yet. The mod only
wise words.
Only blocks only affects models completely within it. Models not completely within it won't be affected. So as long as you leave the back of their bases out, it won't really matter. But yeah, that would be really silly to see.
Yeah, so just no.
Seen it done.
And next spell he has is called Rift.
I was going to say, going from the book point of view, you are going through in a very random order.
Am I? Okay.
Yes.
Rift is his shitty nuke. It's a nice bit of damage, and it has a nice AoE, which is rough terrain after it's in there. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. Bit expensive for what it is, but it'll do.
It's pair 13, range 8. It's AoE 4. I mean, you know.
I've used it a few times to mess with people who don't have Pathfinder.
Yeah, sometimes it can be useful to just go, no, I'll plant this on top of Butcher's head. Okay. But then that does mean you'll be within 8 inches of the Butcher, which is not really a great place to be.
Unless you've got an Arc Node.
Well, yes. Oh, yes, I forget that other factions have Arc Nodes.
Yay!
So what's the range on the spell? It's range 8.
Range 8,
AoE?
4.
So obviously you'd be spending 8 to go through that AoE. Yeah, depending where it falls, maybe, possibly 4 or 5 to get all the way through it. So if you are within 8 inches of the Butcher, he might not even actually get you with that.
It's got reach.
Yeah, that's yeah. still not good enough.
He's only speed 5.
Yeah.
No Pathfinder.
But anyway, it's Rift. Yeah. Let's move on.
Then he's got Mage Knight, which is a spell I can never get the hang of, so someone else can explain how it works.
Okay. Text as in the book, place a 5-inch AoE completely in his control area. While a model is within the AoE, models in this model's battle group ignore forests and cleared effects when drawing LOS to it and ignore stealth when attacking it. Basically, it's a way for Siege to go, hey, look, there's some stuff here, and get him and his jacks firing at it. And that's pretty much it.
Unlike what I was doing in the Welsh last year, where I was putting the AoE down, walking my battle group into it and shooting out at stealth models.
Yeah,
and it took 2 rounds before somebody corrected me.
Yeah, you're a special little boy there, Nick. It must be said. It's an alright spell for 2. It's a great way of getting around stealth, which works with what Siege does. Oh no, there's a couple of defenders that can now pummel that thing with stealth. It works.
Pretty good.
When you're coming against casters such as I know Grail has got stealth as standard in Circle. There's a few others out there. Obviously, Denegra, I think she's got stealth, hasn't she?
Yeah.
It's definitely handy ability to have.
Well, I was going to say, why would you cast Mage Sight when you could just have taken Triumph in your initial list?
Shut up, go away.
Triumph, the most ironically named warjack in the game.
I don't think Triumph is a bad jack.
I don't either.
Trolling us.
And I don't think he's a bad jack either, I really don't.
We talk about
he's as good as Nis, I think.
I'm actually not trolling. I don't think Triumph's bad.
Yeah.
I think everybody slags him off, but then...
I think he's overcosted.
I think the best indicator you could have was the fact that briefly Merc players thought he was available to them through bad seeds, and we're all really excited because it's like, we've got access to Triumph. This is brilliant. We can look through stealth and have Explosivo. It'd be wonderful. And then PP went, actually, no, you can't have Triumph. You can have a normal defender though. And we're like, I suppose it'll do.
Normal defender's pretty shit. Quiet, to be honest.
We'll talk about this on another episode about Triumph. Anyway, last spell of the day, Force Hammer. Costs 4, D6 slam regardless of base size.
It's a trap.
Kapow. It is a bit of a trap with a Focus 6 caster, but there are times that you can cast it and quite effectively. When I've actually used it on a knocked down opponent.
You knocked your opponent down and then used it on him?
shot the first shot off, boosted the damage. Shot the second shot off that Reinhold gave me, boosted the damage. I've got 4 focus left, and I'll just force hammer you.
Boom. Halley and Reinhold.
Siege.
Reinhold.
Leave it.
Never. Yeah.
Robert.
Sorry.
It's like nearly midnight. I don't care.
Yeah, I think Force Hammer is expensive, but there are times where it's just so worth it to slam something into a wall. Or, indeed, the Warjack standing behind it.
Yeah, it's quite good to slam something into a Warcaster as well. Get the Warcaster knocked down. I think a lot of people's issues with slams are if you're committing a Warjack or Warbeast to slam a model, it slams it away and it's kind of there flapping in the breeze. Obviously, any effect that allows you to sort of slam away without having to sacrifice a model to doing that is going to be an added bonus.
This is why crit devastation on something with a 4-inch AoE is one of the most hilarious things you'll ever see.
That's familiar. I've seen that somewhere before.
Yes. It was in that preview that we did last week for the Colossal.
I was going to say, more the fact that I slammed Denny into a wall by aiming at something that stood next to her.
You played Gunnbjorn?
No, I played a proper faction, Mercs.
Mercs have crit devastation.
On mules.
Yeah, mules on it.
It's lovely. Should we move on to his feet?
Why not?
Well, earlier in the intro, you said he's a cracking Warcaster.
That was kind of a pun.
Up to his feet.
Yeah.
So his feat's called Breach. The first time an enemy model suffers damage while in his control area, damage is doubled, I think?
You're getting this confused with these sources. I'll read out the text. The next time each enemy model suffers damage while in Siege's control area, halve its base arm when calculating damage from the damage roll. Breach lasts for one turn.
Yeah. It's very, very effective if you're playing a doubles game with Esorcia.
Oh, yeah.
Halving armor and then double damage.
A ground pounder shot that took out two slayers? Three slayers? Someone remind me how many slayers Conrad Siege killed?
That's horrible.
I think it was 18.
Double damage over arm and halving your armor.
I will say there is one thing that I have seen almost every Signal player I play against playing wrong with this feat.
Which is?
And that is the wording suffers damage.
Oh yeah, if you don't
you
damage.
You have to beat the armor first to halve it.
Yeah, no, I remember us going through this, Mike, when I very first played it.
I've seen so many Signal players go, right, so halve your armor, now you got to beat it first. Yeah, it's not automatically a given on every single thing you'll hit.
Oh, really?
Unless you have some real armor piercing first.
But it doesn't expire unless you beat the armor.
Yeah. You've actually got to suffer damage.
Your next shot can still go
through. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. It's one of those whole things where if suffer damage meant to just be hit, then every time Beast09 got hit with anything, it would get the advance. So, you know, you've kind of got to watch out on that wording. It is very specific. But it is still a hideously powerful feat.
Oh, very good. Very good indeed. I think the one issue that a lot of people have with Siege is Nick, you mentioned he's got tricks that you've seen and tricks that you've not. I would beg to differ with that. I think he's very much a one-trick pony. Once you're faced off against him, you kind of know what he does. And you can, to a degree, mitigate it. Obviously, it's difficult with the foxhole, but I think with him, you know what he does, you know what's coming. It's just a case of preparing as best you can for it, really.
I've seen one of our local players do something very different with him. And okay. I'm not going to reveal that trick completely because I know he's taking it to Masters and would quite like to
have an element
pull
of surprise
it on a couple of people. Siege is a very good run-and-gun caster. That, as you said, you've got the foxhole drop, being able to go through there, the mage site, giving things there. But on the other hand, he is also quite a tough nut to crack.
Yeah,
he's base armor 17 with the ability to camp all six of his focus, 7 if he pulls off the squire.
Yeah.
And with if he's got a junior hanging around giving him +3 armor, he's 18 wounds, I believe. 17 wounds, 18 wounds?
18.
I'm not disputing he's hard to kill. Definitely, he's a hard nut to crack, but
that puts him beyond Karchev and Butcher territory. That's how bad that is. So,
no, he's a hard nut to crack, like you say. He's hard to kill. But I think you can, to a degree, mitigate that offensive potential. But obviously, like you say, if somebody else has sort of discovered a bit of a new trick with him, then fair play to him.
I was going to say, you can mitigate that defensive potential. It's called Epic Aeris.
That's true.
Woke up, pew! Okay, you're on
17.
Only
available then in one list this time, so.
Yeah, true.
But then again, Aeris, to a degree, can do it as well, because if she gives disruption, you immediately lose all your focus. So, if he gets the disruption off on him, again, focus gone.
Yeah, no, but as I said, only available in one list now, so that'll be interesting to see.
Well, two.
Two lists if you take P, yeah.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, is a Merc player, I am.
I think you and Rep players are going to be the only ones who do.
I don't know. I think you might see a few people playing Pieris as well as Eris.
Circle players in that new tier list.
No. I think you might see her popping up in some War Machine factions.
If nothing else, she can take it the book fairly easily.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we were discussing Siege.
we were.
So, yeah, there's Siege's little collection of delights. He's a horrible caster to face. But then
he
again, he's also
when I used to play it.
He's also Signar, so, you know. The best thing you can do is like circle them with Doom Reavers and get them to attack. That's quite fun.
You know, it's also fun circling him with precursors.
A little bit. Anyway, should we move on to the tournament news that you pair had?
Yeah. Well, I was I spoke to a chap by the name of Leon, who is hosting a tournament down in London town in Harlow. I think Harlow's in London anyway. I could be completely wrong there.
Close.
I think it's near enough. It's near enough. It's down south, so anything down south is London in my eyes. Just get the details of that. I'd say it's the tournament down in Harlow. It's going to be a 16-player, 15-point, plus obviously 7-point reinforcements. It's standard steamroller with relaxed time limits and using two lists, divide and conquer, so each list must be played at least once. Ticket cost is £15 for the day. You get all tea and coffee you can drink, as well as a donut in the morning, which sounds very nice. The running Golden Thrall there, best painted army, obviously wins a bronze, silver, or gold Thrall for the effort. And also KR have offered to sponsor the tournament. There's no sort of suggestion as to what exactly they're offering in sort of sponsor, but you'd expect to see a couple of cases maybe, and who knows what else. If you want to get in contact with them, yeah, you can join their forum. It's quite a long link, so we'll pop a link up to that in the show notes, or alternatively, you can email them at Leon, L-E-O-N, at harlowgamesclub.co.uk. Again, we'll maybe pop that up in the show notes, so you can obviously get in contact with him. It looks like it could be a good event down there. I don't think I'll be able to make it myself. I don't know about either of, or any of you three, should I say.
Kurt's the closest thing we have to the south here.
When is it again, sorry?
On the 16th of June.
Probably not, no.
I could be wrong on that day, actually. No, I don't think he's actually put a date on there.
Organisation people.
Awesome. Yeah, no, he's not put a date on there himself. I can't see one on there. I can only see Harlow Tournament. 16 players? No, I can't see a date on there.
So get back in touch with us. Give us the date. We'll shout you out next week.
I'll have a look now, see if I can get the date now, because I'm sure he did put it up on Twitter the date of the event. One moment, I'll see you now.
I mean, the tournaments I was going to talk about were we do only have the dates for. One of them was the little tournament myself and Mike went down to last year, which was held by the Ross on Y guys.
Dyson Dex Gaming.
Dyson Dex Gaming. Yeah, that's the name of the club. Last year was called Fly Another Day, I believe.
No, this year's is called Fly Another Day. Okay. Last year's was Live and Let Fly.
Last year was Live and Let Fly, and this year was Let Fly Another Day. There. It's both a Magic the Gathering tournament and a War Machine 35-pointer on the same day.
There's Magic involved, oh dear.
Magic. Yeah, they kind of shuffle them off to the back of the room. it was quite nice last year. We got sort of all the tables arranged at the front, and they got their sort of their prize table, and then it, at the back in the corner were the Magic the Gathering players, and in the other corner was like the 40k table. It was like
single table.
Yes, it was quite sad, really. But
and there's an auction which happens for charity. This is all to do with the air ambulance. All money raised goes to the air ambulance.
It's a really good cause. Now, it did cause some bidding wars and surprise donations last year, so even if they do publish a full list of prizes, it might not be what turns up on the day in whole, as it were. Because I think a surprise battle engine got added last year, didn't it?
Yes, that was my Crix battle engine that I won.
I know to Neil, who's one of the kind of the key members of the club down there. He used to play up north here with me before moving down to Ross. So I've not been to any myself, but from speaking to him, they're good events. They're good lads down there. So it's it'd be nice to maybe get down for that. When was that one? Sorry, when did you say that was?
That's the 14th of July for Fly Another Day.
Mike beat me to it. Yeah.
Well, that's because I've got it on screen right here.
It's kind of close to the ETC, that one, maybe, for me, but we'll see. We'll see a bit closer to the time, see if we can get away.
It's a nice cheeky one day, and it's for a good cause. I know as long as Mike or Jimmy are going down, I'll definitely be going down, because I quite enjoyed it. And one of our friends, Vaughn, who used to be in part of Dudley Dark Lords, who's now moved to London, is guest hosting the auction, and that is always a laugh, especially when War Machine players start buying the Magic the Gathering auction items. That was bizarre.
Yeah, very odd.
Vaughn's another well-travelled player, because he used to play up here up north as well.
I think he's been all over the place at this point, frankly.
I think he's the most well-travelled War Machine player in the country.
Ron was one of the first people to try and get me into War Machine back when I was at university.
Oh. I've had a look, and I've actually found that date for Leon's tournament down in Harlow.
Yeah.
It's actually on the 10th of June.
There
we go.
So.
And the other one, I'll put a link in the show notes for this one. Pop onto YouTube, and there's a nice little trailer for a tournament that's going on close to Halloween. I do advise you give it a go, and it will give you some more information.
It's called Hallows Havoc, is it?
You're ruining it. They've got to watch the advert.
Well, how are they going to find the advert if they don't know what the thing's called?
He's going to put a link in the show notes.
There'll be a link in the show notes.
Okay.
And this will actually be a link in the show notes, not a pretend link in the show notes, like I usually do.
Might even get people to read the show notes. I just want to throw that out there. It's just a potential
thing. I think that's putting it quite a long way, stretching it quite a long way, though, to be honest with myself.
Yeah.
I never read the show notes.
listen to the podcast.
I was going to say.
That's true. I don't ever listen to the podcast. That is true.
You have occasionally listened to some outtakes, I think, but that's about it.
Yes, once some outtakes played at me, not ones I chose to listen to.
Fair enough. Well, before I hand over to Alex to sign us off, I will just say that those of you who've been sitting there waiting patiently for the competition from Terrain Geek, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, because I'm going to put it after the outtakes. So you're going to have to sit there and listen all the way through to get to those.
Don't do that. Put it in the middle of the outtakes so they can't just skip to the end.
Okay. Between now and the end of the show, at some point I decide when editing, could be anywhere, there will be a Terrain Geek competition.
Ooh.
Yeah, knew you'd be impressed.
But that stuff is really nice. I've got a few bits.
It is. Absolutely.
Terrain Geek stuff, and it's very nice. I know, Nick, you've got some as well, haven't you?
I've got two of the pre-painted troll walls, troll/circle walls that he did, some objective markers, which are absolutely fantastic, and I need to pick up another set before Masters, really. Apparently just had word from him earlier today that he's going to start restocking some army painter paints on there, so I might look at picking up some individual army painter paints.
Very nice.
But we'll talk about painting next time.
I would say that also Terrain Geek is actually quite interesting to follow on Twitter. So, there's a recommended one. I think he's at Terrain Geek.
Yeah.
He is indeed.
Yeah.
Is it Stuart? Is it the guy who runs it? Right?
Stuart's the guy who runs it.
Yeah. So getting in contact with Stuart. He's got some lovely stuff.
Well, there we go. I think it's time to hand over to you, Alex, to round out the show for us.
Yeah, I will do. Well, one thing before I do that, obviously, we've not had a painting table today, just in case anyone was thinking they missed it. We've unfortunately cut that due to running a bit late, but anyway, you've been listening to Elite Cadre, the Hordes and War Machine podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously, not all the time anyway. I've been Alex.
I've been Kurt.
I've been Mike.
And I've been Nick.
Bye.
And it's now past midnight. Good night.
Night.
Bye.
You've been listening to Elite Cadre, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. Email us at elitecadrepodcast@gmail.com or find the whole team on Twitter at bit.ly/elitecadre. Music provided by Martin DeBont and Symphony of Spectres. Want to win a unique piece of terrain from Terrain Geek? Go to the Elite Cadre website at elitecadre.wordpress.com. Find out what you need to tweet, tweet it, then follow ourselves and Terrain Geek. Competition closes at midnight BST on Thursday, the 31st of May. Winners to be announced that weekend. For full rules, please see the Elite Cadre website. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Easter eggs.
Right, I'm going to start unfollowing people who talk about football.
Is that a threat or a promise?
Nick.
I'm completely what? Lost at this point.
My wife thinks you sound like a girl.
Really?
Oh, bless.
But it's I fine. Laugh like more of a girl.
Do I have to remind you of the girl who found your voice attractive, Alex, but then was despairing upon seeing your face?
Like I care?
That's just rude. I think we found a use for Alex. He can remember things for us. I'm immensely pleased by that.
Got to circle then.
Circle don't have character
Wolf Riders. There we go. They don't have a character cav.
Yes, they do.
They do. They have the Wolf Lord.
Ah, of course they do, yeah. Wolf Lord. And he's on my desk in front of me, actually.
Wow. That is just impressive. I'm not opening up any of the character cap stuff because we're not doing solos, so...